Welcome to Commodore Hour. Over the next 60 minutes, we'll break down the latest in Vanderbilt athletics and hear from players, coaches, and administrators. Commodore Hour is brought to you by Ascend Federal Credit Union, the exclusive credit union of Vanderbilt Athletics, and by the Middle Tennessee Ford Dealers. Now, here's your host, Kevin Ingram.
On this chilly Monday night in the Music City, we welcome you to the Commodore Hour. Going to have some fun, talk some Vandy sports over the next hour. Got a couple good guests for you, including Vanderbilt interim head football coach and offensive coordinator Todd Fitch. She'll join us for the first half hour of our show. Then a little bit later on, we're going to speak to Stephanie White, Vanderbilt's women's basketball coach. Her season just got underway over the weekend, so we'll see how things are going on the hardwood. Give you a real quick look at the schedule. Lots of things going on over on the Vanderbilt campus this week, we hope. Football versus Tennessee kickoff schedule for 3 o'clock Saturday for Senior Day, the final home game of 2020 for Vandy. And pregame is at 1:30 with our virtual Vandyville telecast to go with it, so hope you'll join us for that. The Georgia game has been rescheduled for December 19th. Women's basketball tomorrow night at home against East Tennessee State. Home opener for Stephanie White's Doors off their loss at Little Rock in their opener. We'll talk again more of Stephanie coming up a little bit later. And men's basketball scheduled for Friday night against North Carolina Central and then Sunday against Mississippi Valley State. So a busy week over on campus. We're going to talk about it over the next hour. Todd Fitch is going to be our guest when we come back. Don't go away. We welcome you back to the Commodore Hour as we talk Vanderbilt sports on this chilly Monday night in Nashville. Let's bring him in, interim Vanderbilt head football coach and offensive coordinator Todd Fitch. We usually do our interviews on Thursday afternoon, but Todd, of course, joining me here on a Monday night. Coach, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you doing, Kev?
Doing fine. This has happened a couple times this season. You know, after you put in the work for a game week, how difficult was it to tell the team that, hey, we're not getting on the buses and going to Georgia, that the game is postponed?
No, it's certainly, you know, it's a unique situation this year, but you just feel for the players because they've had, obviously an emotional week, but as the week went on, I thought they did a really good job of focusing and preparing the right way, and they were excited to go play. You know, it was going to be a great challenge at the University of Georgia, but, you know, the guys that were getting on that bus to go were excited about, you know, going and competing. So, you know, we had to take a step back, explain why things were done and how it was for their best interest, you know, in terms of our long-term, makeup of our team and, you know, player welfare and things like that. So
sure.
I think they understood it and have come back this week and started a great week of preparation for the Tennessee game.
How has all of this been for you personally with the coaching change and moving into this interim head coach role?
Well, it's been a whirlwind, obviously. You know, you're busy just enough just being an assistant coach or a coordinator, whatever it may be. But it's been eye-opening. It's been a great learning experience for me. And as I mentioned last week, really, you know, everything that kind of consumes our mind as coaches is really making sure that this situation is the best it is. We can make it the best we can for our players. And if we get, you know, the last couple weeks of the season and put them in position to go out and play great football and finish this thing the right way.
You kind of almost look at it like just another challenge in what's been a really challenging season and just trying to keep everything pointed in the right direction.
No doubt. You know, there's a lot of distractions and, you know, talk about all the time, you know, distractions destroy most teams. And, you know, everybody in college football has had to deal with distractions one way or another. And we've been throwing probably more than our share this year for a lot of reasons you can control and some you can't control. But, you know, that's been the biggest, you know, obstacle really is just to get them recentered, refocused and get back on the field and prepare the right way. And that's really what we've been talking about this week a lot about is just, you know, focusing on the process of what we need to do this week to go compete, play the best game we can Saturday and obviously, you know, come out away with a win.
You're telling me the other day that your role on the sideline during the game will change a little. You have to stay closer to the field at all times or for timeouts or, you know, whatever situations might happen during a game. Explain that part of it for you. You're usually very hands-on with the quarterbacks during the game, but that'll be a little different with you in this role, correct?
Yeah, you know, obviously when we have the ball offensively, nothing will change. But when, you know, during a special team situation or obviously defensive situation, you know, I have to be accessible because if there's a timeout needed or something with officials, you know, there's only certain things a head coach can do. So I have to be available. So we'll have to alter, you know, our sideline a little bit where the quarterbacks will kind of have to come to me and, you know, be in an area that we can see the field and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, we didn't get to that point last week at Georgia, but it will certainly come up this week at home here. So we'll talk about as we get closer to game time with our quarterbacks, but I'm sure it will go smooth, and it's just something we have to adapt to and make the best situation we can out of it.
You going to tell Ted to dial up any blitzes or anything like that?
he'll be fine. He's got a good package going, and we'll be aggressive. We're going to be aggressive on all phases. That's the one thing I want to make sure we are. We're offense, defense, and, you know, kicking, obviously. You know, let's go play fast. Let's go play physical. And let's make sure we don't leave that field with any regrets. You know, it's been a tough year, an up and down year in a lot of ways. But I just want to see us go play as hard as we can possibly play, play for one another. And I'll be shocked if this team doesn't come out and play with great energy Saturday.
Visiting with Todd Fitch, you've worked for years with Skip Holtz and Lou and, you know, Don Nealon, Earl Bruce. How has taking something from each one of those guys and the places you've been help you become the coach you are now?
Well, there's no doubt. As you sit in a room with a head coach or another assistant coach, whatever it may be, you know, you see things that you always remember. And some, you know, I always say that you learn some things you'll do when you get a chance, and you'll see some things you'll never do. But, you know, I've been very fortunate in my career to be around some great coaches, obviously, as you mentioned, the Hall of Famers, and have some good friends that are, you know, extremely successful coaches too. So, you know, it's just something you kind of absorb. But the one thing you have to be is you have to be yourself. You know, in this unique situation, taking over, you know, late in the year for Coach Mason, I'm not Coach Mason. I don't have the same makeup or maybe the same, you know, way of delivering a message. You have to be yourself. You have to pick and choose things you think that are really good. But at the end of the day, if the players feel that you're trying to be something you're not, then they're not going to believe or follow. And that's the one thing you have to make sure you're doing. You have to be true to yourself. But it certainly has been a great resource for me over the years to be around some great coaches.
Now, when you work with Lou Holtz, does everybody have a Lou Holtz impersonation, you know, either on the staff or among the team?
There's always a few, yes. And we had some players at South Carolina that were outstanding at it, to be honest with you. But, no, he's often imitated. There's no doubt about that. But, that was always one of the player favorites for sure.
Now, you and Skip, you guys go back a long way, don't you? You've worked together, what, like 20 years at various stops?
Yeah, just under 20 years probably at different times. You know, there's times we'd be, you know, in other schools opposite each other, but we've had a lot of success, had a lot of champions. You know, we won a couple of championships together, things like that, and it was a good working relationship. You know, we started when we were young, and we kind of moved up the ladder together, that kind of thing. But, you know, family, friends, you know, our kids kind of all grew up together, and everything. So it's been a fun relationship, and still talk a lot, you know, now that I'm here and he's, you know, still at Louisiana Tech. You know, stay in touch and just see how things are going. But been very good to me and my family, and we'll always be grateful to him.
I'm going to ask you more about the offense in the next segment, but just kind of bigger picture for your offense. How has it come along versus what your expectations might have been going into the season?
Well, obviously, early in the season, you know, coming into it, you know, we were very – you know, new in it, obviously, without, you know, a lot of spring practices, everybody knows, and, you know, interrupted fall camp. But then you also say, hey, we have, you know, a couple of new starters on the offensive line that have never played offensive line and at this level, and a freshman quarterback. So it was, you know, crawling, you know, in its infancy, the first 2-3 ball games. It did some good things, but, you know, the production, the yardage and things like that, that weren't coming out, you know, as much as we liked. The break really helped. We got on a little run after the 2-week break. You know, it was kind of our mini spring ball. And we were getting better. You could see the progress. We did not play well the last game out, frustrating for a lot of reasons. But, you know, up until that point, we had about a 4-week run there that we saw progress every week, some phase, so that you could see it coming. So there's a lot of motivation on our side of the ball, and we got to come out and play a really good game this weekend.
You know, after that run of good games, what could you sort of pinpoint that did go wrong at Missouri?
Well, I think there's always more than one thing. But, you know, I think it was a deal where we played a handful of games in a row, obviously, against obviously quality opponents without a lot of depth, and I thought we were worn down a little bit. That's the first game that I watched on tape after the game that, you know, we looked a little sluggish, a little slower, just overall, not one player. And I think, you know, up front we were playing the 3 weeks previous to that really with five linemen. Maybe a sixth guy got in a little bit. You know, we had some injuries. We had some, you know, health-related guys out. So that, I think the wear and tear and just the physicality slowed it down a little bit, and they were an aggressive defense. And we just missed on some opportunities. We just missed a throw in the second drive of the game that was potentially a touchdown. It was a controversial call, whether it was a targeting or not. If we hit that throw, you get momentum, you go, and you wonder what the day goes like. You know, do you get rolling? But we had some plays, but just never connected on a couple of those to get a momentum. and to create some explosiveness. So, you know, I think it was a little bit of fatigue, a little bit of worn down, and played a quality opponent, and we just didn't play as well as we should have. And you know, you can't hide from that. But like I said, I think this group was really looking forward to playing at Georgia because we talked a lot about going back and making sure we get back on track and playing the way we had been. And I think as we get closer to this weekend, we'll certainly revisit that. And I think our guys will be excited about playing another, you know, quality opponent on defense.
And that will be, of course, Tennessee, 3 o'clock on Saturday. Our guest is interim coach and offensive coordinator Todd Fitch. The Commodore Hour continues in just a moment. Welcome back to the Commodore Hour from the Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. I'm Kevin Ingram, joined by Vanderbilt interim coach and offensive coordinator Todd Fitch. As Commodores get ready to take on Tennessee Saturday, kickoff 3 o'clock, pregame 1:30. Right here on the Learfield IMG College Network. We'll have the call for you with kickoff at 3 o'clock. Coach Fitch rejoins me now. And, you know, as far as the offense goes, it starts with your quarterback, Ken Seals, true freshman. He's had a terrific first year. How has he matured in a short time and just the decision-making part of the position as much as anything?
Yeah, I think you have to play the position, as you mentioned, just to, you know, you can teach, you can, you know, show a video, you can do all those things, which are all important, obviously, but you have to physically play that game at that position. You have to see the speed of it, and, you know, you have to learn how to make decisions quickly, obviously, and be right more than you're wrong. And I think the biggest thing is most young quarterbacks is how do you make decisions when you're under duress? The way the game is played now defensively with all the speed on the field, especially in this conference, you know, there's not many times you can sit back there and, you know, just kind of bounce and throw it, you know. And so, you know, there's things happening fast, and you have to be able to process that information and make those decisions with, you know, a lot of things happening around you. And I think, you know, it's not perfect yet, but that's getting better. And I think his comfort level as a player, as a potential leader of the offense, things like that, he's just getting more natural at it. And then I think the last thing that comes about, he's starting to understand the pieces around him better. To really feel comfortable as a player, especially as a quarterback, you need to understand that protection just like the offensive line understands that protection, or the blocking scheme for that run play just like the line or the back understands it, to put it all together. Because the quarterback has to tie everything together offensively. So I think as he's gotten more reps and more practice time, that's becoming more clear to him. And you know, one thing about this league, every week you're going to see good players and great defense, especially the defensive line. So, you know, that's always a challenge for a young guy. But I just think every week he grows a little bit, understands his mistakes, and he works hard to try to correct them. So that's been fun to watch him, you know, work through that process.
Could you tell early in practice before the season started that he had a good chance of being the guy we've seen?
Yeah, I think there was good competition, especially after the first scrimmage amongst the, you know, guys we had on the roster at that time. And then, you know, really, he had all the reps in spring, all 4 days he had because of Jeremy Moose, who was injured in the spring. So he really got every snap in the 4 days we had in the spring. So you had a good feel that he picked things up quickly. You know, he started back in fall camp, you know, with the most knowledge of the offense and, you know, most practical experience of the offense, which was little for everybody, but he had the most. And then, you know, the one thing it was good to see of him, this first scrimmage, he didn't play bad, but he didn't play heads and tails above the other guys.
Right.
And then he kind of realized his mistakes. He corrected them. And then he kind of went on from there and started to, you know, separate himself a little bit at that point. And then, you know, we had different guys out for health issues and stuff. And it just kind of weaved through the fall camp the way it did. And, you know, he came out on top.
What do you appreciate most about Keon Henry Brooks and just his toughness? I mean, coming back in just a couple of weeks from that injury in the Kentucky game, I know when it happened, we were all afraid that might be a season ender for him. But he's a tough dude, isn't he?
Yeah, the one thing, it's funny when you say his name, is he loves to play football. You know, I think a guy that loves to play football coming back from an injury, whether it be a, you know, a major injury or, you know, a week-long or two-week-long injury, whatever it may be, those guys find a way to get back. And he loves to compete. He has obviously physical talent. He runs well. He has some explosiveness that we certainly need on our offense. And you know, I think once I think he's realizing this year now that he's kind of the, I guess you'd say, feature back when he's been out there the last, you know, 3-4 weeks, whatever it's been. He needs to get his body bigger and stronger because the wear and tear, you know, is harder when you're, you know, carrying the ball 15-20 times a game, whatever it may be. So I look for him this offseason to really, you know, work hard on his body and add some weight and, you know, and some strength to it, and then, you know, go with his, you know, natural talents. And I think he has a chance to have a, a really strong career here as he, you know, goes forward in year three and four, moving ahead. But really, really pleased with him. Love his attitude. And like I said, I think the thing that stands out when you say his name is he's one of the guys on this team that loves to play the game and loves to compete.
We're speaking with interim coach and offensive coordinator Todd Fitch. Yeah, a little more about Keon. He is a good pass catcher, gets the ball in his hands and makes things happen. Is that something that a lot of running backs are either they're either good at or you just don't try it a whole lot as far as throwing them the football?
Well, I think you certainly in recruiting you look for a guy that, you know, there's a lot of things you look for in terms of, you know, grading a tailback. But in this system, we certainly want one that has hands, you know, because we throw the ball to our back, you know, quite a bit. I'd say an average running back that's our starter will catch anywhere from 30 to 45 balls in some form or fashion. And so he has that ability, like you mentioned. And then one of the things about that, and probably the game that stuck out the most is probably the Mississippi State game where he had about 10 or 11 catches. You know, he has the ability, you know, you get him past the line of scrimmage, you get him on the perimeter, then with his speed, to, you know, to create some yards for you. So certainly is important, and, you know, it's a thing you look for in recruiting, and it matters what style of offense you run, but he certainly is a guy that, you know, excels in the system.
Your top three receivers all seem to bring a little something different, you know, Chris Pierce, Cam Johnson, Amir Abdur-Rahman. How do they complement each other and helping each other really get open at times?
Well, I think they all have a little bit different strengths to their game, you know, so they all fit, you know, they're not all the same guy, you know, where, you know, Cam is truly a, you know, a slot guy. He can play outside, but he's a really good slot. He has a feel for the game. As this season's gone on, he's understood more how that position fits here. And early on, I don't, you know, he didn't have a really good feel for that, but every week he worked harder at it, and he started understanding some of the things we asked him to do. And he grew there. I think Chris Pierce is a matchup problem for people because of his size and physicality, you know, and he can play inside or outside. And, you know, his confidence is just shot off the tables. I mean, he's practiced not only what people see on game day where he's really had some good games the last month or so, but every day he comes to practice and he's enjoying football. When I got here, he's one of the guys that, you know, wasn't sure he's going to come back. And I had a lot of long talks with him about what we can, you know, try to get done, what we can do to get him excited about playing football again. And I'm glad he stayed, and I think he's glad he stayed, and it's turned out to be a boost to him, and he's enjoying football again. And then, you know, you talked about Amir, you know, he's built similar to Chris, but they play differently. Outstanding blocker, physical runner after the catch, does a good job after that, and has shown the ability to go vertically and make a couple plays for us down the field. So they all have a little different traits, and which makes it good because you can try to, you know, get them in the right spot and, you know, get certain types of routes to them and try to, you know, make sure you're playing to their strengths.
You know, when I think about some of the best plays of the season, the one Chris Pierce touchdown against Florida really stands out where he made some guys miss. He ran through some tackles. How much does a play like that really get everybody else in that sideline stoked up when they see a, you know, receiver with that kind of strength and just will to get to the end zone?
No, there's no doubt. It's like a great defensive play, an interception or a big sack, whatever it is. That play on our sideline and that day was really, you know, fun to watch. Great to see a guy, and, you know, like I said, make a play. And that's something, you know, great teams I've been on, you know, guys, what happens is they're talented, but their confidence level grows when they see themselves improving. And then when the confidence grows, they make plays like that because, they're playing fast, they're playing physical. So there's no doubt those plays, you know, ignite a sideline or a team. And, you know, I certainly hope we see a couple of those this Saturday.
Sure. What do you feel like the ceiling is for Ben Bresnahan? You're really talented tight end. Another guy who's a good pass catcher for you.
Yeah. You know, good all-around player. I think he's playing in a kind of a system that fits his talents, or he's kind of a hybrid guy. He can play on the perimeter. He can play in the core and be part of the run game. And, you know, he's really kind of done a jack of all trades, if you will, and done them all pretty well. Has played really consistently. You said who's played the most consistent football probably from game one to today? It's probably been Ben, you know, at all positions. And, you know, some other guys have come on. We've talked about Chris and Cam and all those guys. And some of the linemen have done a really good job over the course of the season. But, you know, if you say, like I said, the course of the season to date, he's probably played the most consistent. Really good hands. And he's a guy that a quarterback trusts. You know, he's a big frame guy like, you know, some of those other receivers are. And they trust throwing the ball to him because he's proven probably, I don't know, four or five times this year where he'll go get it in a crowd or he'll, you know, use his frame and body up a guy and use his body to protect the ball. And those things, you know, those are the things that, you know, really let quarterbacks feel comfortable of just unleashing it and trusting the guy to go get it.
One thing you have to like about this season, and this has been a trademark with Coach Mason's teams, you lead the SEC in all four of the penalty categories as far as fewest penalties go. How much did that discipline start in practice and just kind of building that expectation?
Well, it's something you certainly, the coach has certainly emphasized over the time. And, it's one of those things that kind of goes unnoticed. The one thing you always talk about, you generally lose football games before you win them. And people don't understand that. And what do you mean by that? Well, you have pre-snap penalties. You have, stupid dead ball penalties. You turn the ball over, whatever it may be. So you try to teach your team not to lose before they learn how to win. And that goes right in hand with it because, especially pre-snap penalties are killers because, those are things that you control. Those are mental things. Those are focused things. And you try to make sure you squeeze those out of your game. Every once in a while, you'll have a physical mistake, a holding call or something along those lines or a block in the back. But those mental mistakes, those focus mistakes, you certainly try to squeeze them out of your game.
Give us a quick scouting report on this week's opponent, Tennessee.
Talented team, just like everybody else in this league. The one thing, very physical, good size. They have playmakers on offense, really like the running backs, play physical football. I think their line is one of the probably underestimated, I guess you'd say. They really come off the ball offensively. They have some really talented players. I noticed them because when we've been studying other people's defenses, we've seen their offense through the course of the year, and I've been very impressed with their offensive line over the times I've watched them. And then defensively, I think it's one of the better tackling teams we played. We prepared for them twice now, so we started watching them about 3 weeks ago, like everybody else this year. And I remember watching them the first time a couple of weeks ago, just good, solid tacklers, play a physical style, they communicate well on defense. Just like you would think with Coach Pruitt being a defensive guy, just what you think you would turn on the tape and see. And so, obviously, good talent, like I mentioned. So, be a great challenge for us. I know our guys are looking forward to the challenge. And, obviously, you get to play in a game. It's, a little in-state rivalry like this. These are always fun to be a part of. And, we just want to make sure we're focused on us and take care of ourselves. And, like I said, go play hard and play physical. And, I'll be really excited to watch our players play.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you feel a little extra juice in the guys in practice, just knowing, they're getting ready for, even though it's a strange year, it's still a rivalry game?
No doubt. I thought one of the things that happened, a couple weeks ago when this game got canceled, there was a little lull in the building, because it was a Monday afternoon about 5:30 or something like that. We've done a Sunday prep Monday, the guys were in watching tape, and, we were done basically game planning early downs, first down, second down type of things, and you get that, and it's just kind of like you could feel the air go out a little bit of the team because they certainly were excited about, coming out the Florida game, playing Tennessee. And obviously these games, they have a little bit more excitement to them, and they should. A lot of kids in state players know each other, played against each other in high school. And there's always a lot on the line. There's a lot of things on the line in these games, and they're fun to be a part of. So it's, one thing we want to make sure to do is enjoy it. These games you want to enjoy. Don't dread them. Enjoy them, man. Go cut it loose and let's see what happens.
Yeah, Todd, I was going to ask you before we let you go. We mentioned earlier different stops over the course of a lot of years in football. What are a couple of the more fun rivalries you've been a part of?
Yeah, probably the two that stick out. There have been a couple, obviously across the board, but South Carolina-Clemson was pretty much a hated rival.
Yeah.
It's small state and very, very, very bitter rivals. I was involved in the one game at Clemson is known as the push, and it was wild. Fight on the field afterwards, everything you could imagine. Not with the players, fans. It wasn't players. Players were fine. Fans fighting. I mean, it was wild. And then, really, believe it or not, one of the ones I had no idea when I was at the Big 12 with Iowa State, and we played Iowa. Same thing, in-state rival, different conferences though. They were the Big 10. We were in the Big 12.
Yep.
But really, really heated. Some great games. We beat them when they were number 5 in the country 1 year. I remember and really intense with the fans. The student bodies were unbelievable there. So those are two of the ones that have been fun to be involved with. There's others, but those ones stick out.
See, I was thinking you might say West Virginia-Pittsburgh or something like that.
Yeah, the backyard brawl was a good one, too. That was a little bit more like West Virginia, or I'm sorry, like South Carolina and Clemson. Those were hated rivals there. That was the old Big East days and everything, and that was the backyard brawl, and that was a good one. There's no doubt about that.
Tondo, thanks so much for the time. Looking forward to Saturday. All the best, and we appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for your time.
All right. He is interim head coach and offensive coordinator of the Commodores, Todd Fitch, joining us here on the Commodore Hour. That was some good stuff. I knew we'd been a part of a whole bunch of those over the years, so appreciated Todd spending a half hour here with us. When we come back, we're going to have women's basketball coach Stephanie White join us. Of course, they finally got their season underway with a game against Little Rock over the weekend. We'll talk with Stephanie about how that went and just preview the season and what's ahead with her team on the court tomorrow night against East Tennessee State. Reminder, Gupton Jeep is your Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge, and Ram headquarters and have been serving Middle Tennessee for over 59 years. We'll be back in just a moment. We welcome you back to the Commodore Hour. I'm Kevin Ingram on a chilly Monday night in the Music City as we talk Vanderbilt sports. Great visit with Todd Fitch in her first half hour, and we're visiting now with Vanderbilt women's basketball coach Stephanie White. Her team on the court tomorrow night against East Tennessee State in the home opener at 7 o'clock at Memorial Gym. Yeah, we talked about the transfers and additions to the program. How much of a lift can Anna give your program? Good debut on Saturday as a grad transfer.
I think she can give us a big lift. You know, she has experience. She has postseason experience. You know, she's played in a system that's been very good, very tough. And, you know, she's just a hard-nosed, you know, player. And she's a pro. I mean, she trains like a pro. She practices like a pro. She's going to leave here, and she's going to go play in Europe for a long time. And I think she brings a toughness to us. She brings that experience and her ability to stretch the floor. And you know, I underestimated when we were recruiting, and I underestimated her ability to play off the bounce. You know, she does a really good job of playing in the mid-range game and that as well. And I think she's going to add a different dimension.
Do you think grad transfers who come in maybe have that little extra push knowing this will be their only season?
I think so. You know, I think certainly. I think it's a extra push knowing you have one more season. I think it's an extra year to get a different kind of experience, particularly for someone like her who wants to go play in Europe when she's finished here, to play in the SEC and add a challenge for her. And you know, we're very fortunate to have her experience because we do have a young core, and even our young players don't have a lot of experience. Coy and Chelsea are really the only ones on the floor that do. You look at Brené and you think about, you know, she played 6 or 7 games last year. She missed 9 games her freshman year when we were in conference play. And I look at Brené and I see a junior, but she's really not a junior on the floor. So having it not just in a skill set, but her leadership and experience is huge.
I got to think for Brené, that was pretty special to get back out there. I think it had been like 370-something days since she had played in a game. But just to step on the court again with that uniform on, I got to think it was a big day for her Saturday.
No doubt about it. You know, I think there's always a mix of excitement, nervousness, anxiety. You know, it doesn't matter how much you've been practicing and how much you've been training. You know, when you're coming back from a season-ending injury, there's always a little bit of anxiety about how's it going to feel, how am I going to react the first time you feel something, you know, a little bit sore, not moving, you know, quite the way that you're used to. And, you know, anybody who's come back from an injury like that or a season-ending injury understands that it takes a lot of time before you feel a comfort zone and before you feel normal again. But certainly the excitement and a little bit of nerves for Brené getting out there again.
I've heard a couple of your players, Coy Love included, saying that they really like this offense this season. You know, from a kind of put yourself in a player's perspective, what's challenging about learning it? What would you like if you were a player about playing in this system?
What I'd like is just that there's a lot of freedom. There's a lot of freedom to really do what you do best. You know, we've got playmakers surrounded by shooters. We've got ability to read and make plays instead of necessarily run plays. You get a little bit more freedom, and it's space. The floor is spaced to allow our players to do what they do best. You know, I think the challenge is certainly that we missed an entire offseason of being able to put stuff in, of being able to learn how to play with one another. You know, how do people like to catch the ball? Where are we getting them the ball? How are we setting and using screens in the offense? Timing, spacing, rhythm, flow, things like that. We missed an entire offseason of working on those things. So I do think we're behind the eight ball. And you could see that a little bit in our game. Like, the ball got stuck in the middle of the floor. We didn't have a lot of ball reversals. Everything seemed very disjointed, you know, not in a flow. So it's going to take us a little bit of time to get that rhythm. But I think once you start to put that together and once we start to gel, it's really going to be a fun offense to watch, and it's really going to be a great offense that complements our skill set.
In the basketball I've watched over these last couple of weeks since the season started, I notice in a lot of games that the shooting just isn't there, especially from three-point range. Is that something that really was lost in just that long layoff of, you know, of people being away from campus and not necessarily having the same sort of workout situations in every case?
I think so. I mean, certainly, you know, if you've been required to go home, you're not staying on campus, and even if you are on campus, you can't get in the gym. I mean, most people don't grow up with a hoop in their backyard. You know, most people don't have access to a gym. And with COVID and the way that things were shut down, you're not getting shots up. And if you are getting shots up, you know, it's at a park when they were open, or it's outside if you're lucky to have a hoop. You know, I was watching a lot of the NBA coverage this summer in the bubble, and you know, Jimmy Butler from Miami talked about buying everybody a hoop that they could have at their home so that they could get shots up, right? And it makes a difference. It just does. And you know, you can have a ball and you can do ball handling and you can do as much body weight stuff as you possibly can, but you're just not training in a way that you're used to. You're just not getting the muscle memory and the repetition in the way that you're used to. And so it certainly helped or certainly hurt, I would say, every athlete that you're seeing across every level. I think the other thing is I think there's a reason that we're seeing a lot more injuries. Right, you haven't had the opportunity to train in the same way. You haven't had the opportunity to build endurance in the same way. Now there are still COVID restrictions when it comes to recovery. You know, you've got to drain a hot tub or a cold tub before the next person can get in. You've got to schedule time in the training room, and you're not getting it the same way. You're not getting as much soft tissue work as you were in the past. And so there are multiple levels of training recovery that are missed. Because of the situation that we're in right now. And it's not getting better anytime soon.
Yeah, do you look at it and say, man, if we can get through this situation and this season and have a season and all that, I'll just be thankful and just look forward to what's ahead?
Yeah, there's no doubt. You know, I think we're thankful right now just because we are having an opportunity to play and we don't know how long it's going to last.
Yeah.
We missed each other so much over the you know, 5-6 months that everybody was gone. We have an opportunity right now to come together and to play, and it's taken a lot of sacrifice. Sacrifice from our players, sacrifice from our staff, sacrifice from our administration, sacrifice from our student body. I mean, everybody's having to sacrifice a lot for us to have this opportunity, and we're grateful for that. We're not going to, you know, take that for granted. But certainly when we get on the other side of this and look at all of the things that we're having to deal with and, you know, all of the ways, not just physically, but mentally and emotionally, it is hard to be isolated. It is hard to be in a room by yourself. It is hard to not be able to socialize. I mean, as human beings, our nature is to be social and to connect. And this is very difficult. It's very difficult for us. Can you imagine how difficult it is for an 18, 19, 20-year-old?
Go ahead. I was going to say, I found that I'm a whole lot more of a social creature than I ever would have thought I was, you know, after spending 9 months at home, basically.
Right. You know, we think, oh, yeah, hey, it's great. We get to stay home. But we really are. We're wired to connect. And, you know, I'm just thankful and grateful that our kids are making the sacrifices that they are, that we're able to have this opportunity. But once we get to the other side, I think we're going to have a new perspective and we're really going to relish the opportunities that we have.
Now, on the plus side, have you learned any new skills or picked up any new hobbies over this long stretch of time? Like, I learned how to cut my own hair, which I never would have ever thought in a million years that would happen. Yeah, I don't know how impressive it is when you see it, but, I've made it work. And you know what? I may not ever go back, but has there been anything like that for you?
I think the biggest thing for me is that a lot more cooking, a lot more baking. I'm trying a lot of different recipes. You know, I got myself a ninja foodie, so I'm working on the air fryer and doing some different things in the air fryer. You know, outside of that, the thing is our jobs really never stop. We just do it in a different way,
right?
The recruiting was still on, and we had to do it from a Zoom perspective. We had to get creative. I mean, Gary Reedus has done an outstanding job in getting with our digital media department and putting stuff together from a recruiting standpoint. But you're not on the road, but we're on Zoom all the time. And we're watching games and we're talking with kids and we're in people's homes. You know, we're still having meetings and they're virtual. You know, they're on Zoom. So we still had to do our jobs in a different way. And it was almost more time consuming figuring out a new rhythm. Plus, you know, kids are at home. My kids are at home and going through school at home and, you know, trying to figure out different things that we can do to continue to keep them sane as well. But the biggest thing was I picked up, you know, some new recipes, some new cooking habits, a new baking habit. And then, you know, I'll continue hopefully to do that as we move forward.
One more on your coaching staff. Marquez Webb is now assistant coach. How rewarding is it to see a former player come back or go anywhere for that matter and have a chance to share what she learned with you as coach?
It's really rewarding. You know, I had been trying to get Marquez since she graduated to come back as a GA, to come back as a staff member, and certainly knew that she had an opportunity to go play professionally and talk to her an awful lot about go play as long as you can, and when you're ready, we're here. And last year was an amazing opportunity for her to come back and to be a support staff member, and certainly incredibly proud of Sharika Wright to go on and be a head coach now at UT Arlington. And it was a seamless transition to move Marquez in. She's a student of the game. She loves the game. She loves Vanderbilt. She's an incredible teacher. You know, she's young, so she can relate not just to our players, but to recruits. And she's such a hard worker. She was one of the best leaders I'd ever been around in the 1 year that I coached her. And I'm incredibly humbled and honored that she's a part of our staff.
Yeah, you broke up a little earlier when we were talking about having enough players to practice. Does she get out there and mix it up a little bit?
She does. Yeah, we have to have her and Coach G get out there as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, they got to get out there and practice. It hurts us because it takes them away from the coaching role and really seeing the game and from a coaching perspective. But it's also good because we got to have 10 out there to be able to go live. And so they give us two extra bodies. We put the young bucks out there. Us old folks don't do anything.
Oh, I bet you still got it. You at least have a few minutes left in you, don't you?
Shoot, I'll get in the shooting grills. I'll get in the shooting drills, but that live stuff is not for me anymore.
Stephanie, all the best. Thanks a lot for the time. Fun to visit with you, and we'll see you tomorrow night.
You too. I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
All right. Have a good night. That's Stephanie White, Vanderbilt women's basketball coach. Commodores on the home hardwood tomorrow night against East Tennessee State. 7 o'clock tip-off at Memorial Gym. We'll come back, close the door in just a moment as we continue on the Commodore Hour. Don't go away. Welcome back. About to close the door on this Commodore Hour. I'm Kevin Ingram. We've had some great guests this hour. We had Todd Fitch, Vanderbilt's interim football coach and offensive coordinator, talking about the matchup with Tennessee on Saturday. And the last couple segments spent with Vanderbilt women's basketball coach Stephanie White. Her team will be at Memorial Gym tomorrow night to face off against East Tennessee State at 7 o'clock. Should mention again our schedule coming up this weekend. 1:30 pregame kickoff at 3 Saturday, senior day. At Vanderbilt Stadium, the final home game of 2020, the old rivalry, Vanderbilt and Tennessee. We'll also have our virtual Vandyville on social media, so I hope you'll join us for that. And the Georgia game has been rescheduled for the following weekend on the 19th, so Saturday the 19th for Vanderbilt at Georgia to wrap up the 2020 season. Men's basketball on Friday against North Carolina Central, then Sunday against Mississippi Valley State. Keep your fingers crossed. Hopefully Jerry Stackhouse's team will be back on the court. Of course, they played and won against Valparaiso, but if head games canceled, games in Connecticut, the game at SMU that was supposed to be tomorrow night, but then have a stretch of four straight home games coming up, some good ones too, including 19th-ranked Richmond coming to town next week. A couple other notes, kind of keep an eye on. Commodores doing big things in the pros. Zach Cunningham, 9 tackles in Houston's loss to Indy. That was a heartbreaker for the Texans in that game against the Colts. And Zach now has a league-leading 119 total tackles in the season, 76 of them solo. That's 8 better than Blake Martinez of the New York Giants, who is second. So Zach having a big season. He's always been a tackling machine. Want to say thanks to our producers, Alex Birch and Max Herr. Has been a great job of keeping things rolling in the right direction this evening, and had a good time here hosting our Commodore Hour, and hope you'll join us again next week. And again, be sure to join us for Vanderbilt football coming up on Saturday, the Commodores and the Tennessee Vols. Kevin Ingram saying good night from the Music City. This has been the Commodore Hour. And a reminder, Vanderbilt football is brought to you by the Tennessee Lottery, the Tennessee Education Lottery. Proud to have raised more than $5.5 billion to support education programs in Tennessee. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to tonight's edition of Commodore Hour. Tonight's show was brought to you by Ascend Federal Credit Union, the exclusive credit union of Vanderbilt Athletics, and by the Middle Tennessee Ford Dealers. The preceding was a Learfield ING College presentation of the Vanderbilt Sports Network.